Last time, last Sunday evening, we were introducing the series thinking about living in a world that is hostile to God and all the implications of that, or at least some of them. That's the second, it's the second this evening of those. Last time, we were reminded that the world in general, in its natural state, as we're born, as we live, are hostile to Christ. They're hostile to the rule of God. The world, meaning the system, the philosophy, the people in their organized state, are in opposition to God. They're hostile to the rule of Christ. They plot, they rebel, they try and release themselves from his authority. Sometimes it doesn't always feel like that. Sometimes it feels like perhaps the world is neutral, but when we really stop and think about it, and when we listen to God's word, we understand that actually everybody in their heart plots against the rule of Christ. Sometimes it impacts us in a way that is horrific, which is so obvious. Sometimes maybe it feels quite comfortable for us, but still everybody in their hearts, where the Spirit hasn't worked, they are in opposition to God. They're basically plotting and rebelling and resisting the rule of Christ. That's how the world in which we live is. Either Christ is Lord or he's not. It's not possible to be neutral and to be nice. There was a nice lady on Radio 4's Woman's Hour the other morning. I once had a salesman who worked for me. He was a pretty cool dude called Colin, and he was a real man's man, completely chauvinistic. And he told me one day that he listened to Radio 4's Woman's Hour and found it quite helpful. So he was driving around. So I thought it's pretty cool to listen to Radio 4's Woman's Hour. So now if I get the opportunity, and I was driving to the vets on Thursday, and there was Woman's Hour. And Emma Thompson was on there. And she's just written a follow-up, maybe, I don't know what you call it, to Peter Rabbit stories. So what a nice lady. She's a nice lady. She's been in a lot of those period dramas. She's got a nice accent. Her dad did the Magic Roundabout, didn't he, Eric Thompson? And so, you know, what a nicer person could you have than that? Speaks well, speaks politely, seems deferential and mumsy and all that kind of thing. And just in passing, she said something like, "Thanks be to whoever's in charge up there somewhere, maybe." And you think, even the nicest people who are basically doing nice things and writing Peter Rabbit stories, unless they're submitting to the rule of Christ, if they've got just a vague notion of God up there somewhere who doesn't rule them, who doesn't reign over them, who doesn't relate to them, then they're plotting, they're planning, they're resisting the rule of Christ. And that's what we thought about last week. Paul in Romans puts it something like this. He's quoting lots of Old Testament passages, and he says, "There is no one righteous, not even one. There is no one who understands, no one who seeks God. All have turned away. They have together become worthless. There is no one who does good, not even one. Their throats are open graves. Their tongues practice deceit. The poison of vipers is on their lips. Their mouths are full of cursing and bitterness. Their feet are swift to shed blood. Ruin and misery mark their ways, and the way of peace they do not know. There is no fear of God before their eyes." That's the state of the world. So when the Romans, listening to those words, and maybe us thinking about the world in which we live, understand our world and its opposition to God, when we hear such dramatic descriptions of people as throats as open graves and vipers and so on, what do we think about how we connect and how we relate? What should we do? Well, we might conclude that we need to really withdraw from the world. I know clip art kind of died out about 10 years ago. You're not supposed to use clip art anymore, but I couldn't find a decent picture of a monk, so I thought the clip art one was rather fun. So there's the clip art picture. Sorry about that. But we might conclude, like the Romans might have concluded, if all these descriptions are true of the world in which we live, let's withdraw from this awful place full of people who are hostile to God. Let's withdraw and make our own lives. So you become a monk or like the Amish people. Or you could do a more subtle sort of practical withdrawal where you don't actually sort of form a commune somewhere, but you don't vote, you don't engage, you don't relate, you don't speak. You just huddle together with other Christians and withdraw from the world because it's a rotten place. A bit like sort of people in the bomb shelters during the wars, particularly the Second World War, that as the sirens went off, you went and huddled either under the table or you went to the bomb shelter that was outside somewhere, and you got in that bomb shelter and you all huddled together and you waited for the siren to go off again to say you could be released. Maybe that's how we should be in the world. Huddle together, take a place of safety and refuge, don't come out till it's all over. Or maybe you could take a different view. This is a picture of some Christians, apparently, in Egypt, complaining, probably quite justified in this case, complaining about their rights being taken away as Christians. And maybe, rather than withdrawing, we should start some kind of uprising to impose the rule of Christ by force, to impose Christianity, to try and get back to a sort of golden age, as we imagine it at least, where there was Christendom, where basically Christianity set the agenda, made all the laws, that Christianity was accepted as the one thought, way of thinking, the one ideology that ruled. Perhaps we should, by force, try and get back to that. Or maybe we should live in the world, relating to people in the world as husbands and wives and mothers and fathers and children and neighbors in a way that brings glory to Christ and makes it possible for the message of Christ to be spread. And in particular, with relationship to society rather than just sort of our neighbours and families and friends, maybe we should live as responsible citizens. Not withdrawing, not revolting, submitting, contributing, engaging. And you're not going to be surprised, having given you those two extremes, you're not going to be surprised that what I'm going to try and encourage you this evening about is that God's word calls us to be that middle way of living as responsible citizens, doing the third thing that I mentioned there. But of course, doing it's more difficult than it sounds at times. Perhaps the Roman Christians were tempted to stop paying taxes. There's a godless empire in charge. They worship idols. They make sacrifices to idols, or they think the emperor himself is a god. We know we're part of the eternal kingdom, so why should we pay money to that godless kingdom? And in some way or other, that's always influencing us. It's always affecting us. So very simply this evening, just going to think about a few questions. First of all, what? What are we called to do as we connect with society, even though society is hostile to God? What should we do? Well, very simply, we must submit to the governing authorities. You see that in verse 1 of chapter 13 of Romans. Everyone, Paul uses the expression, every soul, every person, everyone who's reading this, every Christian is to submit himself to the governing authorities. It's a command for all ages. It's a command for particularly Christians who are addressed here. Be subject is what he says. Submit. Respect, obey, recognize the rule. Just to say the opposite, just to make it obvious, it's the opposite of disobedience, rebellion, and resistance. It's a word that's often used in the New Testament for the way we relate in relationships. It's the way that a woman relates to a man in marriage, to submit, to recognize the different roles, to not be disobedient, to not be rebellious, to not resist. To submit, to work within the rules. Submit to who? Well, he says, submit to the governing authorities. All those with legitimate power. There's an emphasis here on those who have power and responsibility in law to keep the peace, to uphold the peace, to uphold safety and security, to make the nation work. That's who we're to submit to, authorities in that sense. So that's what we're to do. And then why are we to do it? Well, the first thing is that God has put them there. You see that at the end of verse 1. The authorities that exist have been established by God. And then I think it's three times they're described as servants of God. And this is extraordinary, really. There's the book of Romans explaining how we live by faith, we've been saved by the work of Christ, out of a godless world which is going headlong to hell. And yet, the authorities, many of them godless, many of them rejecting the rule of Christ, are God's servants. Paul says it a number of times, so we're really clear that they're God's servants. They're put there by God. They're there for a purpose, to promote those who do good and to punish those who don't do good. And so verse 2, first of all, he says it kind of two ways round. There is no authority except that which God has established. Okay, I think we've got it. But just in case we haven't, the authorities that exist have been established by God. So he says it kind of backwards. There's no authority that hasn't been established by God. But just in case you didn't get it, the authorities that have been established, they've been put there by God. What does that mean? That means that the authorities have been put there by God. They're God's servants. Remarkable though it might seem, kind of counterintuitive though it might seem, God puts these authorities there for a purpose. And if we reject their authority, we're rejecting God's authority. What he's saying is, God, you put them there. I don't like them. I don't want them. I'm not going to submit to them. Rejecting them, we're rejecting God. And Paul says, if you do that, you deserve judgment. He may be thinking about judgment from them, and he certainly talks about that later. But he's probably thinking about the judgment of God. So see that at the end of verse 2. Whoever's rebelling against their authority is rebelling against what God has instituted, and those who do so will bring judgment on themselves. Either perhaps the judgment of God or the consequence of disobeying those authorities. So Paul says, if you break the law, expect judgment. That's how God has made things to be. If you're a wrongdoer, be afraid. Don't be complacent. Don't be arrogant. Be afraid, because that's why the authorities are there. They're there to catch you out. Expect judgment. These men, as he describes them, are actually God's servants. Even if they don't know it, even if they care nothing for God, God is working through them to bring about order. Not perfect order, it's a broken world, it's fractured, sin has its consequences, but it's an orderly world. And God keeps some degree of order in his mercy by the way we order ourselves with those who have legal authority and responsibility. The authorities are there to restrain evil and to keep us from chaos. And they do that by commending those who do right and by punishing those who are described there as the wrongdoer. Now, just a little bit of aside for a couple of minutes. It seems to be, in the Bible, a general principle that if we do wrong, there are consequences. And in society, it would seem that the Bible thinks it's a good thing that if people do wrong, there should be painful consequences. Now, I'm not saying we need a return to public floggings or something like that. And I'm not saying we should follow a particular political agenda. But we just need to consider that good law seems to be, or a good law system seems to be one, where there is real, painful punishment for wrongdoing. That seems to be the principle. That seems to be a recognition of our sinful hearts that we need the painful consequence of breaking the law. Now, it may be we need education. It may be that we need love. It may be that we need some kind of rehabilitation and re-education and help. But I think also we need to know there are painful consequences for disobeying the law. And I think maybe sometimes this view that we shouldn't have painful consequences, it influences our justice system, maybe it influences our parenting as well. What do we do with children who break our law as parents? I think that the general climate in which we live is one where what we're encouraged to do if children misbehave, and certainly institutionally in schools and so forth, if they misbehave, what we're supposed to do is to try and contain, to try and distract, to try and explain. And all those things are good. Containing and distracting and explaining. We need to do those things. But just maybe it doesn't recognize the sinfulness of our hearts that if we can sin, we will sin, if there are no consequences to sinning. If there's no consequence, really, to stealing that toy or eating yogurt with your fingers, you're going to keep on doing it. You might get distracted for 5 minutes with something else. Your parent might kind of restrain you, but why would you stop when you get the opportunity again if you don't think there'll be some kind of painful consequence? We've all seen parents in the doctor's surgery or somewhere where they need to be containing, and the children are being restrained and offered vague punishments in the distant future, and we've all done it, and I've done that as a parent, and sometimes punishment's not always appropriate, and you can't always think of the right thing, and there's a whole discussion about what kind of punishment there should be. But I think just from this text here, it's clear that the Bible affirms that there are consequences to breaking the law. That should be true in society, that should be true in parenting, and those consequences should have a degree of pain. What pain we think is right and appropriate and helpful, we have to decide as parents. What we think is right in society, we have to decide together, but in as much as we can promote godly laws, I think we need to support some degree of pain in punishment. There'll be a time for comment at the end, so you can comment at that point. If I feel that you're going to make lots of comments, I'm going to preach for a very long time, then there won't be time. Okay, the aside is over. Verse 5 sums things up in terms of our connection with authorities. Therefore, it's necessary to submit to the authorities, not only because of possible punishment, but also because of conscience. Submit, says Paul, because of the punishment, but more than that, in the way he constructs these words, more than that, he says, submit because of conscience. Submit because you recognize your responsibility. 1 Peter 2 and chapter 13 to 15 is a very similar explanation about how we submit to the authorities. And there, Peter says, do it for the Lord's sake. That's what Paul is thinking about. Do it because of conscience. Do it because God's Spirit is working in you. Do it because you've got new life in the Spirit. And life in the Spirit means you want to keep in step with the Spirit. You want to do God's will. So in good conscience, you want to keep the law of the land. So do it because of punishment, but also do it because of conscience. Think about when you're speeding. Now, both those things are sometimes at play. They certainly are in my life. So on the one hand, you've got the possible punishment. So you come near a speed camera, you've got the possibility of punishment, and you slow down just to go through those lines. That's the fear of punishment driving you to drive slower. But then, perhaps you have your wife sitting next to you, and she's the voice of conscience, who, when there's no speed cameras, and maybe there's no possible danger of knocking over children who are going to school, and there's no seeming possibility of any police nearby, who still say to you, this is the speed limit, you need to keep it. All the women are kind of half agreeing, all the men are nodding their heads, and they're all thinking of a thousand reasons why that shouldn't apply, but there we've got it. We've got the fear of punishment, the speed camera, the voice of conscience, the helpful wife. And in lots of instances, those come together. Paul is being very wise about this. There's the fear of punishment. God's put that there to help us. But more than just that, we've got the voice of conscience, which, of course, is not always other people. It's our own hearts knowing what's right. You see, if it was just the fear of punishment, then we'd spend our lives trying to dodge the speed cameras, wouldn't we? We'd speed up in between. And if there's no fear of punishment, we'd just break any old law. We'd make our own laws up. We'd decide, well, I've got an understanding about these things, and I'll make laws to suit myself. And I'll only keep the law when breaking it might have consequences. But Paul says, punishment, but also conscience. So in this godless society, God's put servants there who will keep the law, who will promote good, who will punish evil. And you need to submit to them. Submit to them because you might get punished, but especially submit to them because you're living for the Lord and you want to obey the law because you recognize His ultimate authority. So what then? Submit. Why? Because God's put them there. So what should we do? Well, Paul gives some samples, some examples in verses 6 and 7. Paul says, relate to authorities in a way that recognizes their God-given role. And when you do that, do your duty. So you recognize they're there because God's put them there. And so you submit. And that submission is not passive, it's active. You do the things that you're supposed to do. You do your duty. So you obey the law. You support the system. You do what you can to make it work well. And Paul gives an example of fulfilling legal obligation. He says, that is why you pay taxes. Because you recognize this whole system has to hold together with some money. You pay your taxes. It's the law for you to pay taxes. Pay the taxes. As Jesus says, give to Caesar what is Caesar's. To make society work, you pay your taxes. Then he mentions revenue, which is probably more like a kind of customs duty that he's referring to there. Do it, even when it gets in the way of you having some spare cash for a new car, because you respect the system. Pay all the tax that's due. Be efficient. Be scrupulously honest. But you might ask, well, what if the government isn't very good at using my money? The answer's tough. Try and encourage the government to do better. But in the meantime, pay your taxes, pay your VAT. You might say, well, what if this tax or this fee or this fare is astronomical? That's a ridiculous price for that train fare. That's a punitive tax. Tough. If you don't pay it, you're stealing. You're not honoring God. Paul gives those examples, but of course it extends out to keeping the law at a very kind of fundamental level, to keeping the basic laws of the land. But in giving those examples, he kind of stretches it right out to how we connect and relate to authorities generally. How we keep records as companies, as individuals, and fill out our tax forms correctly. Extends out to things like health and safety and food standards. We, as you know, a little team of us were painting railings just around the corner on Friday in Washington Road, and there was two young ladies who were kind of in charge, who had a great deal of experience of painting, I could tell. You can see the disrespect kind of building already in me. There we are. We have rubbed down the railings and done the weeding, which was also very frustrating. So the frustration is building at this point. And then we get to start with the painting. And these two ladies who are in charge, me and my friend David, who's a local councillor who lives around the corner, we're painting the railings. And we're painting really fast compared with everybody else. And we're proud of that. And they come along and they say, you've got to wear safety goggles. You know, we're painting the railings. It's been a frustrating morning. It's really hot. You've got to wear safety goggles. And we didn't want to wear safety goggles because we were frustrated by these people anyway who didn't seem to know what they were doing. And we were getting on really fast and we didn't want to wear the goggles. And you could feel all that resentment building up. And I said to him, because I had it in my mind, because I knew what I was preaching today, and I said, I'm preaching about submitting to authorities on Sunday evening, and so I'm going to have to wear the goggles and not be a hypocrite. And so he had to wear the goggles as well, and we did. And that's just a trivial example of how you have to submit, even when maybe it doesn't quite seem to make sense to you. And sometimes health and safety laws and sometimes things like that are very frustrating. And you think, it's all got out of hand and risk management and everything else has just gone crazy. But you submit because ultimately you're saying, I want to honour God, so I'll wear the goggles and I'll wear the luminous jacket. It's bright sunshine, right? And you're nowhere near the road and you have to wear a luminous jacket. But you wear it because ultimately you say, I'm submitting to God. And I'm the sort of person who, thankfully, God's worked a little bit in my heart, who wouldn't wear it and who would take it off as soon as the woman had walked away. You know, naturally, that's what I want to do because I want to rebel. And I think you want to rebel as well. But we don't, because we want to submit to the authorities. Now, I just wanted to kind of ground it. I'm not trying to say I'm so wonderful wearing the goggles because I was very unhelpful and even sort of rebelling at all. So I'm not trying to say that. I'm just trying to ground it in real life experiences. Because most of you are not major tax dodgers and fraudsters. Most of you are just being frustrated by some little official somewhere who's getting in your way. And you want to rebel against them and you want to just punch them out and get them out of the way. And you don't want to pay astronomical fares. And sometimes you don't want to pay punitive taxes. And sometimes you don't want to wear what you're supposed to wear and do what you're supposed to do. Sometimes you just don't want to keep the law because it's stupid. And God says, submit for the Lord's sake. Submit to the authorities that God has instituted. He's put them there for you. They're your servants. They're his servants. They're your servants. They're there to benefit you so you keep the law. There's 1,000 ways in which you need to submit and to not resist. Another question you might ask is, what about when authorities compel me to do wrong? Or what about when authorities prevent me to live out my faith? Many Christians wrestle with this, and we're going to focus on that mainly next week. But the general principle is that we continue to submit, even if there are particular areas where we have to stand up for our faith. The default is that we find ways to respect, to support, to obey. And there have been wonderful examples of people through history and people even now who are wrestling with that. And as I say, we'll think about that a bit more next week. But the default, even in a society that's actively promoting evil or opposing Christ, the general principle here is that we submit. That's Paul's general working assumption, that society is punishing evil and is promoting good. And there's a great deal of latitude. I think the Romans at this time were not actively persecuting Christians, but as I've said a few times this evening, they weren't a great society. They're an idolatrous society. So there's a great deal of latitude that Paul offers in the kinds of societies that we're going to submit to. So Paul says, obey, pay respect. Sorry, pay where you need to pay and show respect. And just finally, just to kind of help us think really about our final responsibility in this, it's to engage. Submitting doesn't mean we have a kind of disengaged view, because we have a particular, perhaps unusual in the whole realm of history, but we have a particular situation in our country and in many others at this time, that we have a democracy. So in a way, we're part of the ruling authorities. To some degree, no, it doesn't always feel like that, but we put people in place. We put people in positions of authority and people there who take responsibility. Sorry, we need to take responsibility for that. We're part of the ruling process. So we want to try and as part of our part of being responsible citizens, we want to engage with the political process. We want to vote for people. We want to promote good. We want to seek to restrain evil. And if we do oppose anything, we want to do it within the system, respecting the lawmakers. So we might go on a march. We're part of the democracy. We want to make our views known. We want to inform those who lead us. So we're part of the democracy, but we don't loot shops. And we don't throw stones at policemen. So we respect, even in the way that we seek to protest. We respect politicians. We vote for those who think will do the best job in restraining evil and in promoting good. And as much as we're able to, we get involved in the local or the national political process and try and do good as part of the ruling process. So we submit, but we also want to engage. Don't become cynical, we don't become frustrated. We're called to submit, to respect, to pay our dues, to pay our respect, to fear God, to honour the King. That's what we're called to do.